Welcome back to another Your Ball Was Out Tennis podcast today with Phil from Tweener Head Tennis. Now, today we have a very special guest for you. Today we have Jordan, and Jordan is the new Auburn Women's Tennis Head Coach. This is his first head coaching job after being with Texas A&M for over 5 years, clinching three SEC titles and winning the Women's National Championship team title this past year. Now, we're very excited to have Jordan on the podcast, and we covered a lot of what he is going to be doing with this program, as well as his looks on what NIL means for women's tennis, what it was like to recruit more players to his team when he only had three on his roster when he first started his job, and what it was like to win a national title with an SEC winning team. YouTube channel as well to watch the full video interview as well. And now enjoy our latest interview, our first interview of 2025, with head coach of the women's program at Auburn University, Jordan. Jordan, thank you so much for joining us here today. I appreciate you even doing this in Australia, your home country, and finding something to do while you're there, while you have some time off after being on the road for so long. But Jordan, thank you so much for joining the channel. Thank you for joining us. And congratulations, I should say, for your job at Auburn.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. Excited to always talk to anyone that wants to talk about college tennis, and you know, guys like you do a great job, you know, spreading the word about what we're doing out there. But yeah, it's been a whirlwind kind of year for me, and yeah, I'm excited for what's going on, and yeah, excited to be here today.
You've had an interesting journey in terms of how it all came about and how you got to Auburn, let's just say the least. You're at A&M as a player, I believe, and then you were a volunteer assistant coach, then you became an assistant at Tech, and then you went back to A&M, and now you're here. So talk to us a little bit of how you got, I would say, into the coaching realm after you were a player yourself.
Yeah, I had a really good experience playing at Texas A&M. I played for Coach Denton, the assistant at the time. Was a coach named Coach McKinley. Bob McKinley was a great player. Coached at Trinity back in the day when they were like killing it. And, you know, I loved everything college tennis. Obviously, I was a good player in the juniors and was fortunate to do well in some of the junior grand slams and stuff. But I knew whenever my playing days were over, I definitely wanted to coach college tennis. And a lot of the credit comes to, you know, Coach Denton and Coach McKinley and obviously Coach Kevin O'Shea, who's still there at A&M right now. So, their kind of passion for coaching and tennis and college tennis in particular, you know, I just loved everything about it. So, you know, I knew once I got done playing, I had an extra year to finish school at A&M. So I helped the team out, and, you know, we had a really good team that year as well. And I got very fortunate. I got straight away out of school. I got a great job with Brett Macy at Texas Tech. He's now working at USC. And kind of got the ball rolling. You know, obviously I got very lucky, I think. And, you know, I'd like to think maybe a little bit of my personality and what I did as a player and helped me there. But I think it was a little bit also of the case of right place, right time. And yeah, I got into it and, you know, kind of have been stepping up and learning and evolving ever since then. So it's been, yeah, quite a journey. It feels like just yesterday, but it's also been quite a while now. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
And you've been an assistant for a while, and then the Auburn head coaching job came about. And what made you take that leap into head coaching? Let's just say that. And what was the process like kind of going through, okay, I've been helping along and I've been doing this for so long, but now I want to take the next step. What was your drive behind that?
Yeah, I always wanted to do that. That was something, you know, from the outset, you know, especially when you're a young coach, you think you know it all and you definitely want to be calling the shots and you would do it this way and stuff. And I think the longer you're in it, the more you learn that you don't know and you know, things you would do differently, and you're kind of exploring that. But it's something I always wanted to do. And, We had a really good year in 2022, and then I started kind of getting a lot of looks, and I got offered a few jobs, and they weren't the right ones and stuff like that. But the process with Auburn, it was just kind of a little bit different. I really enjoyed my conversations with them. They've, been a good team, but not an amazing team. So there's like definitely some room for growth there, but obviously shown that they can do something. So it kind of was like the best of both worlds. For that standpoint, but it was an interesting process and different than all the other processes I've been in a part of, jobs I got offered and jobs I didn't get offered. And but it was just like the right timing for me. And it's tough though. I really love A&M, and I had a great experience here as a player, and we had a lot of success
Well,
with our team there,
the best
so
success, the best success you could ask for.
So it was definitely an interesting process, but it was, Auburn made it really easy and very enjoyable. Honestly, once the ball kind of started rolling, it went really quickly. But yeah, it's something I always wanted to do, and kind of felt like now was the right opportunity.
And for you too, kind of seeing your now being in that head coaching role, I just have to ask, it's been kind of a whirlwind getting into that head coaching job already. You've met everyone on the team, I'm assuming, correct?
At Auburn?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that, and because I wanted to ask the follow-up question to you is, what's one of the first things you said to your team as a head coach?
Yeah, well, the first thing is, when I got the job, we only had three players, so that was definitely
That's fair. That makes it easier.
It was honestly conversations on, are you guys going to be here or not? And
Wow.
these are the reasons why I want you to be here. So in May, when I got the job, it was a weird time. It was a really weird time in my life, but also for this, we were in the middle of like trying to win the national championship at A&M, but like the portal was opening and all this kind of new world that we live in. And
Yeah.
so they announced the job, but I was still coaching for A&M, and that had a rough go of it last year, Auburn. Some, obviously questionable stuff happened, and the reason why I'm the coach. And so it was really trying to talk about like, what are your plans, and this is why I think you should stay, and those were the biggest things. And once I kind of figured out who was going to still be here, then it was kind of trying to build a team. But yeah, my first conversations, as crazy as it might sound, is, what do we need to do to keep you here? So
And what was your biggest selling point? Because one of the things that you said during your press conference, when you got announced as the head coach for Auburn, is you love the tradition family. And I feel like you don't hear this a lot. And maybe you do, maybe you don't. But I like how you said graduating student athletes. That was one of the biggest benefactors or points that you made. So, what do you think your biggest selling point was for the girls that were still on the team?
Yeah, I think obviously giving them like the ultimate tennis experience whilst in college, that was like the biggest thing that I wanted to sell, is like, you're going to have a great college experience. Auburn's a great place. You're going to graduate. You're going to get all the resources that are available to you. And now I want to give you like the ultimate tennis experience, which I think is, doing everything you can to improve, playing the best tournaments, being very competitive, doing everything you can to try and improve as a player. And I promised them that I was going to give them that and every opportunity to grow, and no stone will be left unturned from the tennis standpoint. Because really, the athletic departments and stuff these days, they do such a good job of setting the kids up for success off the court, So obviously they knew what they were getting from that standpoint, but just kind of also knowing that I'm going to do everything I can to help them be the best players that they can be, and whatever their ceiling is, let's try and get there as quickly as possible. So
And you, as a recruiter, you were mentioned a couple of times in your bio and just at Texas A&M. You've done some incredible recruiting in terms of getting talent to where you're coaching, and from what you did at A&M and what you're doing at Auburn, what do you think your secret sauce is, or what do you think your biggest talent is in terms of recruiting these girls to come play for you? Because it's not easy, especially when you're in a conference like the SEC, especially when you're competing against all these other big schools. What do you find that works for you when you're pitching a school for some of the top juniors in the world?
Yeah, I think the first thing is being pretty relentless in the pursuit of kids. I think that is the thing, like realizing that you're going to get rejected a whole bunch and you're going to get no responses, and you got to just, keep going at it and dig, chipping away and chipping away, and just even get in there to get a conversation. So I think that's one thing that I do a good job of, is I'm pretty r relentless, and I'm not gonna give up that easily. But I think once I'm in there, I just try to be myself, so I think a lot of people try to, I never want to seem like the used car salesman. I want to be myself and let my passion for tennis and getting better in college tennis and everything that that my job entails kind of shine through. And I think not everyone's that way, so I just truly try to be myself, and let that, I hope that the they can kind of see the intensity and passion that I bring. And the thing with college tennis is you don't need to get 25 kids a year like football. You just kind of try, if you can get one really, really good kid a year, you're gonna have a great team. And that's really hard to do. I know it is, and I struggle with that all the time. But I think if you can just, it's a numbers game. If you can talk to as many kids as possible and put yourself in the hunt, one's going to land every now and then. So, but I just try to be myself and sell the tennis and be as authentic and real as possible. And I think, the longer I've been in it, maybe I've developed a little bit of a reputation, or like for being a decent coach and things like that. And then that's helping you, I think, down the road. But definitely initially, just trying to be yourself, and the things you're going to sell, try and be genuine, and try not to come across as that kind of used car salesman, I think.
And if I was to ask you what makes you in that sense, or what makes you your personality stand out, and I guess what I'm trying to get at is with you, when you say be yourself, what does that mean to you, and what does that mean to the kids?
Yeah, I think for me, being myself is just being, I love the game. I love tennis. I love everything about it, like the preparation to play, the practices. I always tell people, practice day, like where I'm out there doing individuals with the girls, and then team practice, that's like my Wimbledon, so I love that a part about it. So I think, I just try to be authentic in that aspect, that I really love developing players. I'm going to do everything I can to help them be the best players that they can be. And I think that's me. I think I'm an honest person. I have pretty good energy, and but I think it's mostly just passion, and I think a lot of people are attracted to that. They want to be around people that are like that and give off, really good energy. And that's how I try to be all the time, and try and be consistent with that. And I think it starts in the recruiting process, but it starts with how you do every day on the court. And so I think that's what the real me is like.
And for you too, kind of going through your coaching experience and you as a player, was there anyone you looked towards or anyone you looked to help you, or that influenced you in a way that kind of made your coaching style a part of who you are? Or is there any influence that you've had, or anyone in particular that has made you Jordan?
Yeah, I think obviously it starts with, from the tennis coaching perspective, I think everybody that I've been, especially when I got a little bit older, kind of got coached by, fortunate to be a part of the Tennis Australia Federation and work with some really good coaches in Australia, and then coming over to the US, Coach McKinley and Coach Denton and Coach O'Shea. So I think those like influenced a lot about how I go about it. But also, I think learning some things for like things I didn't like that they did, and not saying that they're not great coaches and they didn't help me more than anything, but there was something that, oh, I'd do that differently, So I think you take a little bit from everything. And then obviously I'm very fortunate to work with, Brett Macy and then Mark Weaver at A&M, and learning from them and kind of learning about how the job is day in, day out, and what you need to do to get good players, and learning things for about what they do. And it kind of formed me, I think. And so I don't think anyone in particular. I had a really close relationship with Coach McKinley at Texas A&M. He definitely was a role model for me, with his knowledge of the game and how he treated every player differently in terms of how we coach them. But I think it's you'd learn a lot from a lot of these influential people that you spend a lot of time around, and it kind of you mix that with your personality and your kind of personality traits, and this what came out. I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but it's been somewhat successful so far. So I'm sure I'll evolve as years go on and I get more experience and I make some bad mistakes, but yeah, just trying to get a little bit better every single day with that stuff.
No, it's true. And for you too, kind of going through your coaching style and kind of philosophy, is what's one piece of advice or coaching advice that you've learned now that you're a head coach? Or is there anything that's kind of stuck with you in that coaching mentality that you learned from any one of these people that influenced you?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, especially in college, like I think if you're coaching up one player, it's a little bit different because your sole focus is on that one player and what you need to do to prepare them and the schedule they need and all those kind of things. I think in college tennis coaching, there's so many different things that pull you in different ways. You know, you've got 8 to 10 players, you've got other coaches you're working with, you've got, you know, the school side of things, you've got all the different people in the athletic department. I think the biggest thing that I've always worried about, and I really, you know, learn a lot about this from Mark and, you know, Brett as well, is worry about the things that really matter. The things that really matter are, you know, the practices, the private lessons, the recruiting. You know, you always hear Kirby Smart, keep the main thing, and that's the really thing, the biggest thing that I think is important is, you know, I really dedicate myself to the private lessons with the players and the team practices and the recruiting and you know, the scheduling and preparation of the players, but also the scheduling of matches, the things that are going to directly influence our players getting better. You know, those are the only things that I'm really focused on, and I put all my energy into that. And if I'm gonna dog on something, you know, it's something, you know, looking at a hotel for the team or something like that. So, you know, the things that really matter, I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned, you know, for a long time. So I've been very fortunate to kind of get see that and learn that when I came here. You know, I've pulled in a few different directions sometimes, you know, and other people want your attention, but always making sure that the main focus on the things that really matter, and which is helping players become better players. So I think that's like the number one thing. And then I think, you know, in college tennis as well, is not overcomplicating things for the players. You know, they're all really good get here, and from the actual tennis standpoint is, you know, keeping things pretty simple and trying to help people. You know, so many coaches focus on the negatives in players and trying to get those better, but, you know, focusing on the positive and what can they do well and how can we create a player based on, you know, what they do well and chip away at like getting their weaknesses better. But okay, like they have a great forehand down the line, how many times can we set up, you know, you being able to hit your forehand down the line and kind of be a little bit more positive thinking as a coach. So I'd say those are two of like the major things from a little bit more of a technical aspect than like the whole holistic view of being a college tennis coach.
I like those answers. And are you allowed to shout out another SEC team's coach, Kirby Smart, as a War Eagle, or is that not allowed as
Yeah,
a
I don't know. Like I don't know what the protocol is there, but they're having a lot of success. So, you know,
That's
well,
fair.
until we start doing that, then I think it'll be good for now.
Okay. I like it. I like it. And in terms of this recruiting process and now name, image, and likeness, you can't escape it right now. Has there anything that you've learned very quickly, or has anything changed in terms of your view of recruiting now that there's NIL, transfer portal, all these kind of bigger entities now that's kind of directing the narrative for some of these kids? Is that has that changed your way in recruiting, or is that has that kind of kept it the same?
I think the transfer portal definitely in a way has, because you're kind of like, oh, well, should I take this player or should I wait and see like what's going to be out there in May when the portal opens? So that's been like one thing. You know, you get more information as the years go on. You know, the thing with the portal is you never know who's going to pop up there, right? And so, you know, it's holding spots to the portal, but then like the portal's not as deep as you might think. So that's definitely been one thing, is like how to hold spots for the portal and if that's something that's important. And I think a little bit depending on what your team's like, you know. So like for instance, like the portal will roll around again in May, and we have already a very good team. And like we could add one more piece on the portal, like maybe it shoots you up a spot or two. And do you do that, or you take a freshman, like, because but like you're like, oh wow, we've got a really good team. If we get a little bit more experience, that could be the difference between winning it all or coming second, right? So that has definitely changed things of like holding spots. I think the NIL piece, honestly, on the women's side, I hadn't really like noticed it at all until recently, like actually in the last like couple of months. Like I never lost a girl. They're always like, oh, I really liked you and I want to go there, or I like the weather there, or whatever it was, but the last couple, I've actually never had a kid tell me no because of money until like the last 2 or 3 months. And I had two or three kids be like, yeah, like they're gonna give me more money and stuff. So that was kind of the first kind of piece of it.
Was that shocking to you, or was that kind of just like, this is what it is now?
Well, it was a little shocking to me because I didn't think it had infiltrated the women's side. Like I knew the men's coaches have been talking about it and saying that it's become a factor and an issue. And but I didn't think with the women's side, with the full scholarship and stuff, that it was going to be as much of a factor. But I do think a few teams have, realized that this is their opportunity. There's a lot of murmurs about the NIL changing here after this next year, obviously with the revenue sharing that's coming in and stuff for the bigger sports. So I don't know if that's, people have some money and they're just shooting their shot now and before it maybe changes or rules are more, a little bit regulated, but it's definitely a little frustrating. When it, like I think, we sell a great product and we have a great reputation as coaches, and we can help players become the best players they can be. And I like it when it comes down to that stuff, when it starts coming down to like nickel and diming, because at the end of the day, the money that's being offered is not like life-changing at all. So then it's like it's a little bit frustrating, but adapt or die, I guess is the term they say. So I'm interested to see what happens here in the next few months with, the revenue sharing and what the rules look like, because then it's going to become one way or the other. You either got to buy into it or you're going to get left behind. So it kind of just see how it kind of evolves here in the next little bit, I think, on the NIL. There's a lot of murmurs about like this is changing, it's going away, it's going to be actually fair market value and things like this. But the proof will be in the pudding and we will see. But we definitely have to evolve and adapt with the times if things don't change.
And yeah, it I think you're right. You haven't really noticed it on the women's side as much as the men. The men you have a lot, especially the bigger schools and some of the schools that may have more money than others, definitely has a greater impact. But do you think that loses value in what colleges provide if they are just going for the monetary value of it?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think, I can just use the example of us at A&M. We had a good team and we were able to help some players get better, and I felt like that helped us get other players, and that was kind of the natural evolution. I'll be pretty frank here. My kind of view on NIL is, I get it. If 30 schools or 40 schools are doing it, you feel like you have to do it. But I think on the women's side, there's only a few teams that are really trying to entice kids with that. First, you're not meant to do that. That's like the rules, and you're not meant to like entice the kids with like a set number of money. And then two, I think that, and this is very transparent. If in my opinion, it's like I'm not doing a good job recruiting kids and getting kids the right way by getting them better and stuff. So I feel like the only way I can get players is by throwing money at them. And that's how I see it. So I don't think it's good. I don't think it's the right thing. I know I went to Texas A&M, and the reasons why I went there, and I would benefited from everything that Texas A&M provided me. That's like Auburn right now. I think the girls on our team, they're getting provided such a great experience that they're going to help them for the rest of their life. And so I do think it's not necessary, but at the same time, if everyone starts doing it, then you kind of got to get in on the game. But I think the NCAA or whoever the higher ups realize that it's a little out of control, and it's not the right way that it's going about it. So I do think there's going to be some change. I guess we'll see how much change and
That's fair.
whether that whether we'll kind of go back to being how it kind of was a little bit more.
And it's still fresh in a sense of what's going on and how what's being put into NIL value and what's being put into a lot of these players. And you see it on the football side, and we're starting to get into that area of now billionaires are getting involved in recruiting players to their alma mater. I think the biggest example right now is the kid from Michigan that just flipped his commitment. What was the headline? $13 million. Like it becomes something that it becomes professional sports, and that's not what college tennis is. Because it's I've always grew up on the fact that it was a student athlete mindset, hence student first. So if we're losing the student part of it, it just becomes athlete, and then it becomes professional athlete. So what's the difference between them doing that and making quote unquote the quick buck versus earning their way through their talent and what they can achieve? Is
Yeah,
that
I agree.
wrong to say, or is that
No,
kind
I
of
think
for a
it's
different
right.
reason?
I think it's right. And I think what you're going to see is you're only going to see more kids transferring with this kind of stuff. And what I think you're going to see here, and this is just me, maybe it's being a pessimist, but you are going to see some kid go and take some money from some school in a sport like tennis and not play and just take the money and run. And you're going to see that happen on the tennis side, especially if the money's going away soon. You know, people will just go and take the money and, you know, go and use their value. You know, like everyone, you know, you go to college, everyone who goes to college, you go to create value for yourself and your life and enhance your life. And instead of doing that, you might go to a school that isn't right for you just because you can make an extra $10,000 or whatever it is. And I just really believe that you go to college to improve as a student athlete. You go to enhance your life and make your life better. And you know, and from the tennis side of things, to give yourself a chance to play at the next level. And I feel like that's what you're owed, you know. And
I
you
agree.
know, because at the end of the day, some of the money that you hear in this whole rumors and smoke and mirrors, but you know, these kids are getting offered money to play, and you know, if they played a full year on the ITF Pro Circuit, they'd be making a quarter of that money, you know. So it's like,
Which
what's
is
going on here? You know, it just doesn't seem right. But I do think it's going to get somewhat regulated, but I just don't think it's sustainable. And I do think when you start hearing these numbers of $13 million for some quarterback and stuff like that, and obviously the football is a little different, you know, they are creating great revenue for the, you know, the reason we're here is because of football, you know. So I do understand that in a way, but the same way, you know, if it keeps going down that way, then they're going to start thinking these kids are employees. And if they're going down the employment route, then that's really bad space for tennis, you know. So hopefully it doesn't ever get to that, because if the student athletes are considered employees, then college tennis, I think, will be a shell of what it is right now.
I it's a difficult topic to kind of put together, because there's so many narratives that you can write about it, and there's so many roads that NIL leads to, and there's not really a straight and narrow way of conducting the NIL revenue as of right now, especially for a sport like tennis, where it's the most, I think, what was the stat last year? The one of the most international sports in college tennis. So you have all these kids coming here from different countries looking for an education and to play sports. But it becomes, how do you get them to come and stay there?
Yeah, I agree. So hopefully we don't have to be talking about this too much in a year's time, but we will see, because you know, if it doesn't get regulated, it's only going to get worse and crazier. So I guess we'll see what happens here soon.
That's fair. And on a more positive note, let's talk about DJ. How do you describe her success this past fall?
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, DJ had a real rough go of it last spring, sorry. And I think she was excited about the new coaching staff and kind of the new era of Auburn women's tennis. And she's just really improved as a player over the last 3 or 4 months. And you know, she's really bought into what we were trying to do for her game. She's a spectacular athlete. If you see her, she's, 6 foot tall, very strong, but great mover. And just trying to get her to play to her God-given assets a little bit more, being a little bit more aggressive and stepping into the ball and trying to finish more balls on the net. And she's really bought into it. And she was fortunate to have a really, really good semester. I think she could have gone really deep at the, she made the quarters of the All-American, but I think she could have gone really deep. The one day that they played two matches in one day, she played like five in the third and 3 hour match and then had to play again like an hour and a half later. But one day they did two matches. So that was a little bit, and she was playing doubles and stuff like that. So it was a little bit tricky for her, but it was nice for her to be able to go and like get into the NCAA straight away, have that so we could play a few more pro events and different things like that for her. And obviously she had a great run in Waco and was able to really kind of solidify where I see her as one of the best players in the country. And I told her that from the start. I had a really interesting perspective for her because I saw her as like an opponent, and when you're preparing to play a team, when we come to play Auburn, I'd be like, DJ Bennett's really good. Like, how are we going to beat her? And I don't think she saw herself the way that maybe other people saw herself. So I think, getting that through her brain that, she's really good and she can be an elite tennis player in college tennis. I don't know if she believed that as much as, other people did. So trying to get her to believe that and then play the right way, and it's snowballed positively and ended up having a great run in Waco, singles and doubles, and just really improving as a player. And I'm excited for the future for her and all the opportunities that this fall has given her, going into the future.
And for you seeing that as a first-time head coach coming into a program with her and seeing the su instant success that she's had already, how do you try to capitalize or continue the momentum of a successful player? And I think I asked the same question to DT, the head coach at Oklahoma State, when I visited them, is how do you continue success? How do you continue the momentum that someone may already come with, and how do you use that to your advantage?
Yeah, I think for her, first of all, for her is like just making bigger goals and not setting any limits on anything, just being like, she's ranked number two, she's made the final of the NCAA. She go, well, how can we improve our pro ranking? How can we get to number one? How can we, solidify ourselves as a legit number one player in the SEC? All these bigger things and not kind of capping, being satisfied and being complacent and realizing, wow, we're really good, but we got bigger fish to fry. And so I think that's like the biggest thing with her, to kind of capitalize on it and use this momentum to be hungry for bigger and better things. I think as a team, having showing that it's kind of the proof, like a lot of people say things like, we're going to get you better and we're going to give you these opportunities. Like, here's living proof. A girl that played number three last year for a team that lost in the second round, 4 months later, she's making the final of the NCAA, and the only thing that's really changed is her environment around her, which is us, So, I think it just gives us proof that if you buy into what we're doing and what we want to do, and you can improve tremendously too. And everybody's journey is different, and I don't have any magic dust, and Auburn doesn't have any magic dust, but the magic dust we have is that we're going to do everything we can to try and help the individual become the best player they can play. So I think it gives us instant credibility, if we didn't already have it. And I think it just, having a player like that who's getting publicity and puts on the map, kids see that and they want to look up to that. And I think it helps you get in the mix. It's like, I think I was able to help Mary Stoyana some to get her to be a really good player at A&M, and I think that gave me instant credibility with the younger kids. And now DJ kind of reinforces that. So I don't think it gets you recruits by any means, but I think it kind of gets maybe your like foot like 1 inch in the door, So, but I do think there's a team, and I think it, and the other players on the team, I think it gives them something to look up to too. Wow, we train with this player every day. We do exactly what she's doing, and look what she's doing. Maybe I can be like that, breaking barriers mentally, for all the players on the team. But it's definitely nice that for DJ, mostly for her, that she's getting these experiences, and it's opened up a lot of doors for her, which hopefully she can capitalize on and turn them into even bigger things.
And I like how you brought up Mary as well in that regard too, because at A&M you had so many good players that helped lead the Aggies to a national championship that helped kind of, like you said, solidify your kind of your person as a coach and towards other people as well. And when you have players that have that potential, and I mean, at A&M, you guys pumped out some amazing players, starting from Carson to Mary to now, there's so many others now there. It's a blueprint, and that blueprint, like you said before, is not the same for everyone else, and it's not the same for every player that you meet or every player that you have the opportunity to work with. It just becomes one that you have to kind of start from scratch every single time.
Yep, for sure, for sure. I definitely agree.
And Jordan, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. You got to say that first of all. And the second thing I wanted to ask, and this is my last question, is because it's very topical and we're sticking with your previous job, because Aggieland, in terms of what happened to their indoor facility, I just wanted to kind of hear your thoughts about that. And you must have been a somewhat a part of that process of listening to the plans and then all of a sudden it being canceled. Just wanted to get your thoughts about that, because it seemed like it was happening and then all of a sudden the carpet was just ripped out under from the whole program.
Yeah, I think first of all, Texas A&M, it's my alma mater. I love Texas A&M. The two head coaches there, Coach Denton was my coach. Mark Weaver was the coach I worked with for the last 7 years. So I want that we deserve, Texas A&M deserves to have the best facilities, that tennis can provide, and indoor facilities that I do think it was like a, I'm not going to get into all the intricacies of it, but I do think it was like kind of a crappy deal for the school, the indoor facility. But I do think it was a great opportunity, to have that facility there for the players to be able to improve and play matches and scheduling. I think those are the biggest things. I'm disappointed. I'm hoping that they'll get the funding eventually, whether it's through donations or the athletic department, builds one right next to the outdoor facility. I'm hopeful for that. I went on my recruiting trip in 2009 to Texas A&M, and Coach Denton, I think, very honestly told me that he thought it would be done by my second year in school. And now, I'm the head coach at Auburn University 15 years later, and there's still not one there. So, it's been a long time talking about it. I do think that they deserve it. I do think Texas A&M men's and women's tennis are a little bit of a victim of their own success. I think if the teams hadn't been so successful on both men's and women's side, that maybe they would have it, because they're like, well, the teams are really good, they're doing well year in, year out, they have great players, do they really need it? So I do think they're a victim of their own success and a little bit of standpoint. But I do think it's really unique times right now in college athletics with the revenue sharing and everything, and so it's not a I think it is difficult to put a huge investment into an indoor tennis facility when, schools are going to have to be paying $20 million to the student athletes. So, but I am hopeful that they get one, very much deserved on both sides, men's and women's. And, I think it would be a real shame that if Coach Denton or Mark finished their careers at Texas A&M and they weren't able to have access to an indoor facility, I think that'd be a really, really big shame, because it is a little bit, as much as great weather in Central Texas, it was a headache, especially scheduling matches and having to adapt time and things like that. But I've got my fingers crossed and I'm hopeful, and if I ever come into a big sum of money, definitely would way. So I'm hopeful that it, for Mark and Steve and the players there, that they get it, and even for us former players, that eventually, they got what they deserved.
100%, 100%. And for you coming into your first year, and this is my final question, I promise.
No,
This is
no
my
worries.
final question. For you, you've already kind of had a successful kind of first year, first fall with DJ and what Auburn's been able to achieve. what would you consider to be a bigger success? Because you've already had success. What do you consider to be a bigger success for your kind of first full year as head
Yeah,
coach?
I think I would call the year successful is if we can overachieve. Everybody's
Okay.
got a different level, kind of. I'm not going to set a limit or a low limit or whatever, but my biggest goal as a coach is every year you're throwing different obstacles and challenges, based on, I started with three players in June. Maybe the next year you have a bad injury. Maybe the next year there are no excuses, right? But I think if you can just try and overachieve with the team and the circumstances that you have every year and get every ounce of it, then you're going to have a successful year. So I think if we can overachieve with the players and the team that we've got, and we can milk get every last drop of milk out of each girl in terms of try and get the best out of them and improve them and get them better, and then I'll call it a successful year. We're in it to win it. We're not trying to come in and, make the second round or make the Sweet 16. If you look at our goal is to win national titles and to win SEC championships. And is that realistic this year? That's not for me to say. I'll let the pundits say that. But if we're not shooting for the stars, we're not really doing it the right way. So we're going to try and be competitive and win every match that we can and try to improve as players day in, day out, and but be where our feet are. And if we can, excuse me, if we can do that, then we'll overachieve and we'll kind of get what we deserve. I think that's the great thing about tennis is, you can't get a lucky goal and sit behind the ball for 90 minutes or whatever it is. You got to go out and win the match. So, we'll get what we deserve this year based on how we prepare and how we play and how we improve. And that's what I'm most hopeful for, that we're going to do everything we can and give the ultimate commitment to improving as players and competing for Auburn. And then if we can overachieve whatever people think that is, then I think we'll have a successful year. But I do think the future is going to be bright, and there's no time like now to go and make it happen. So, when the girls get back to practice January 4th, we'll be trying to make it happen.
I love it. I love it, Jordan. And I really appreciate you taking time out of your day in Australia to come and chat with us. I think a lot of people need to hear your story, be a part of your experience with Auburn, with the War Eagles. And we can't thank you enough for joining the channel today. And we can't wait to see what you do this year. We really appreciate it,
Yeah.
Jordan.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, and we'll take all the support we can get. It's a new era for Auburn women's tennis. So anyone wants to come for a along the ride, follow us on social media and me and the girls, and hopefully we can have a special era here.
Yeah, absolutely. Jordan, thank you again, and we'll see you soon.
Yep. Thanks.